Hello, I'm Josie Briggs, the editor-in-chief of the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. And each month, I tell our listeners about papers in the upcoming May issue, each month's issue, to draw your attention to some of the interesting science we're about to publish. This month, I thought I'd tell you about six papers. I want to begin with one on SARS-CoV-2 antibodies. We are working hard to bring our readers the latest on the pandemic that we're all living through. And clearly, a lot of the issues that are drawing attention right now have to do with immunity. We do not yet have long-term follow-up on vaccine results, but expect to be seeing that kind of work over the next couple months. But in this issue, we will be publishing a paper that looks at the durability of the response to endogenous COVID-2 infection in hemodialysis patients. This paper, authored by Saki et al., reports on 83 hemodialysis patients who recovered from coronavirus disease. It found that most patients maintained anti-spike antibodies reasonably solidly over a six-month follow-up period, although about a quarter had decline in titers. And indeed, a few of the subjects, immunosuppressed subjects, did not initially show a strong antibody response. In patients with sero conversion, the decline of IgG antibodies over time was associated with older age, female sex, and non-severe clinical presentation. We think these findings on the antibody response in hemodialysis patients should basically be reassuring to physicians caring for this vulnerable population. And clearly, all of us are going to be interested in seeing how durable the vaccine responses are. The two basic science papers I want to tell you about. The first deals with a protein called CRUMS2. This manuscript, authored by Müller et al., has incredibly powerful images of this protein. And one of them, one of these images we put on the cover of the May issue. CRUMS2 is a slit diaphragm protein that interacts with nephrin and can be, when it's mutated, a cause of steroid-resistant nephrotic syndrome. In this report, in mice, the authors show that what the loss of CRUMS2 does, it results in heavy proteinuria, progressive podocyte foot process effacement, renal cell injury, and inflammation. And it indicates that CRUMS2 importance for the glomerular filtration barrier is similar to that of nephron. The authors go on to show in vitro that human CRUMS2 mutant proteins accumulate in the endoplasmic reticulum and trigger ER stress, suggesting that ER stress induction may also play a pivotal role in steroid-resistant nephrotic syndrome onset and disease progression. Another basic paper that we think provides an informative new model deals with the late development of the kidney during gestation. This is a study in the rhesus MAC model looking at nephrogenesis. Many of our readers are probably aware that premature infants are born with fewer nephrons compared with full-term newborns, and that it causes an increased risk for chronic kidney disease and end-stage renal disease in adulthood. In humans and in monkeys, most nephrons are added during late gestation by a process called lateral branch nephrogenesis. This process does not occur in rodents and mice, which are the animals most often used to study development. But in the rhesus MAC kidney, as shown in this report, there's a human-like lateral branch nephrogenesis process going on in which kidney progenitor cell transcriptome changes are probably quite similar to those that occur in humans. So our authors suggest that a molecular study of lateral branch nephrogenesis will allow us to understand defects in nephrogenesis that occur in preterm infants. And our editors were excited about this paper because this is a phase of renal development that's been very poorly studied. Now I want to turn to our more clinical papers. We have three this month that I think our readers will find of interest. The first deals with the question of travel distance and its impact on kidney transplantation. Some patients seeking a kidney transplant may choose to travel to a center further from home, recognizing that by being listed at this, they may have a more favorable chance of achieving a transplanted kidney. In this study, by Whelan et al., they found that patients in the U.S. were more likely to travel further if they were of non-Black race or if the nearest center had a lower volume of living donor surgeries. Longer travel distance was associated with higher likelihood of having a living donor transplant, but lower likelihood of deceased donor transplant, and was very weakly associated with higher graft failure risk. These findings provide some insights into travel and some of the concerns that all of us in nephrology have about unequal access to kidney transplantation. I also think readers will find it very interesting, study on urinary vesicles. As many people know, the vesicles are present in urine and provide a promising non-invasive source of kidney biomarkers, but have not yet been able to be used for clinical application because of challenges in knowing how to normalize vesicle protein levels, quantification, and whether characterization of vesicles in spot urines could provide value. In extensive series of studies in patients with kidney disease and healthy controls, the authors of this paper, Bill Jorp et al., found that urine creatinine was highly correlated with urine particle counts and provided three urinary vesicle quantification methods and compared the results. This offers insight into mechanisms underlying these differences. This paper has an editorial accompanying it and suggests that this approach may allow the measurement of urinary vesicle protein content to move sooner into clinical application. And finally, we've published another paper on membranous nephropathy. As most of our listeners are aware, in the last decade or so, we've learned a lot about the proteins where antibodies responding to that protein trigger the explosive kidney disease we call membranous nephropathy. A new antigen, it's been discovered by Sethi et al. They found a subset of membranous patients who were negative for all the known antigens and studied these patients very carefully. They identified a novel protein, protocadherin 7, which shows granular basement membrane staining and co-localizes within the glandular and the glomerular basement membrane. They detected antibodies to this protein in both serum and kidney tissue from people with this form of membranous nephropathy, but not from controls. So these findings suggest that protocadherin 7 is a new distinct subtype of membranous nephropathy. So those are the six papers from this month. I hope my podcast encourages you to go home and look at your issue and that you find a work of interest in this issue. Thank you for listening.
This podcast is copyrighted by the American Society of Nephrology. All rights reserved. All content in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be medical advice. This podcast should not be used in a medical emergency or for the diagnosis or treatment of any medical condition. Please consult your doctor or other qualified healthcare provider if you have any questions about any medical condition or before taking any drug, changing your diet, or commencing or discontinuing any course of treatment. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the American Society of Nephrology.